Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their careers. This week, we have a special episode from the March 2025 GCV Innovation Summit in Monterey, California. I was joined by special guest Bonnie Simi, President of Operations at Joby Aviation and former head and founder of JetBlue Ventures, after talking with her on the main stage at the conference. Bonnie, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
You know, when I started out my career very early on, corporate venturing or even venture capital was not in my radar at all. I was very much into aviation. I was a pilot, flew as a pilot for United and then JetBlue. But I gradually moved into leadership at JetBlue, and I've always had an innovative mindset. And so JetBlue is an innovation airline. They're famed to disrupt and bring humanity back to travel was the initial mission of JetBlue. And so as I moved through different operational roles, I was constantly tapped for, Bonnie, how should we think differently about this area or that area? And I've spent some time at Stanford learning design thinking. I was a VP of talent at JetBlue, so I was still a pilot, but mainly now on the HR side. And I had leadership development was one of my teams. And I said, I'm going to bring this design thinking into JetBlue as a way to think differently about challenges and problems. So then I became really known as the innovation person internally. Fast forward a few more years. At this point, I think I'd been at JetBlue maybe 10, 12 years, and JetBlue was 15 years old. And the CEO calls me, he says, Bonnie, we're 15 years, and I think we're becoming a little stale. We need to be more innovative. He says, how do we become more innovative? And I said, well, you know, the future of any industry starts early in startups. And so in order for us to see where the future is going, we should have a seat at the table of startups. And he says, how do we do that? And I said, I'm from Silicon Valley. I did grow up in the Bay Area, so I have one degree of separation from the startup ecosystem. And I said, we should invest in them. He said, how do you do that? And I said, well, we should set up a corporate venture firm. He's like, great, go do it. And so that's where the idea began, and it was in 2015. I had been at JetBlue for 12 years in a variety of different roles, and I knew the company very well in all of the operational areas.
You was a perfect profile, actually, to start.
Yeah, so I had a ton of operational experience, plus I was in HR. In HR, you learn a lot too. So yep. I definitely had to call a friend. And I'd known Linda Yates and Paul Holland, her husband, for many, many years, both personally, because we had gone family camping together, but also professionally, I knew Paul. He had worked at Foundation Capital, so he was a VC. Yep. And so I knew Paul actually more than I knew Linda. And he had asked me to come in for, Foundation was doing an investment in an aviation company. And one of the partners knew aviation, but he didn't. And he said, will you come listen to their pitch and tell us? So I knew him from that, and we just became good friends. So I call him up and I said, look, I need to learn more about your space. And they were very active in sort of an incubator space as well. And so they helped open the doors for me to get a space inside this incubation space. So that, and then they helped me understand all the various terms and introduced me to people. So, you know, I had coffee and lunch a couple of times, went over to their house, introduced me to more people. Well, in the span of 3 months, I got a crash course. And I also knew I needed to hire investment professionals. My very next hire was someone, Raj Singh, who is an investment professional. That was because I needed to have that. I was corporate, but I didn't understand the ventures. Brought him in. He was my very first hire. So Linda and Paul helped me think about it, introduced me to people. I didn't take a ton of their time, but we stayed connected, of course, as friends, but also professionally. And ultimately, they came full circle because they saw the corporate venturing world and they've brought a very good experience and kept advising me, but then they would take that experience and advise someone else. Yep. And then they decided to open up a whole advising firm around corporate venturing, and it's been amazing. So it's neat. I think when the perfect type of helping each other out in the ecosystem is the helping each other out.
Yep.
And initially I thought it was me going to them just as friends. I'm like, help me out here.
It's paying forward.
And then in the end, it's paying forward because they then ended up taking that and building out a great practice. They helped me understand VC and then realize there's a market, there's a product market fit. And because back then, VCs looked at CVCs as bad money because...
Or dumb money.
Dumb money. Yep. Yeah, not bad money. Dumb money.
Because it's no bad money.
Dumb money, as I rephrase that. Dumb money. All those CVCs that don't know the venturing side of things. And I was hell-bent to make that not the case. And that's when, so VCs didn't want to have much to do with CVCs initially. And I think what Paul and Linda did is crack that open and helped train the CVCs about the space. So then become extremely value add. So that then is value add for the VC community. So now if you have the right CVC on a cap table, that really helps, right? And so we see with JetBlue Ventures, I saw that VCs whom I built really good relationships, if there was ever anything in the travel space, they would come to us and say, hey, what do you think about this? Yep. Because they didn't know enough about it, right? And if we liked it, then they would invest. Sometimes we would co-invest, sometimes they wouldn't. And in fact, then full circle from that, a lot of startups, when they would go pitch for a Series B, it got around that if you didn't have JetBlue Ventures on your cap table, you better have a pretty good reason why. So then any startups coming to us say, hey, we're told you need to be an investor with us to validate us.
Yeah. No. And I think there is something to say, and maybe you could speak to that. So we just did a keynote panel at the GCV Montreal 2025. Yeah. And you talked about, it's not about strategic or financial, it's all about financial in a way. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So I think one of the big questions that always comes up on corporate venture, are you a strategic investor or are you a financial investor? And I would say it's always financial, but in a different way of thinking about it. So instead of saying strategic or financial, I say you want strategic returns, investment returns. They're both financial, right?
Both
They're getting returns, right? So investment returns, pretty straightforward. You put in $1 million, you get $10 million, that's 10x return on your exit. That's pretty clean. Strategic returns are a little harder to quantify, but in general, like for most companies, it either increases revenue or reduces cost. From the JetBlue perspective, because as an airline, it was also about improving, enhancing safety, which indirectly, of course, reduced costs and adds revenue and customer service. So those were kind of the areas when we were looking at investing in something. Did it somehow, and especially early on, have a path towards providing that? And in fact, two of the startups that we invested on very early on, one impacts revenue, one is cost.
And please double click on both of them. I think they are good examples you shared during the keynote, which first you could describe each of them, but how you decided to invest in them.
Yeah, so both of them were very early. They were both seed stage, 6-10 people with a good idea. One of them was around dynamic pricing for airline revenue using some AI tools. And the other was about weather prediction using a lot of data sources, AI tools. Mind you, this was in 2016, 2017, before AI was a thing. Both of them almost went under several times, just getting through those early stages. And we came along to help. And I had this vision that they would help us. So let's talk about one of them. So Flyer, it's called Flyer. And they do the dynamic pricing for airlines. And let's say that we invest $1 million. Return the money is important, at least $1 million. Double your money is great. Triple your money is great. Like you literally look for maybe a 10X. Like you want to invest, that's a ton of a measure. Can they get to 10X? That's $10 million. And then, wow, if you really hit out of the park, you get 100X return. So airlines. Airlines, very thin margin, but massive revenue. So JetBlue last year, $9.3 billion in revenue. So if you could increase revenue by a tenth of a percent by doing some AI dynamic pricing, that's $9.3 million a year. Yep. That's your 10X right there almost. And if you could increase it by 1%, you're talking $93 million in
Which
one year.
Which compounds every year.
Exactly. Yep. So you can see that is what I'm talking about is strategic returns. So that's one great example. Now, Flyer hasn't exited yet. So it's not an exit, but it has increased revenue. Now, some of it's hard to predict. Is the revenue because of this, because of that? Like, it's a little harder, a little squishier, but I guarantee you it's provided enormous strategic value.
With very early access.
Very early access. Oh, we actually helped them pivot because they were doing some kind of airline fare lock. They could predict. It was interesting because I went to them and their business model was around providing an insurance product, fare lock, basically, which now some airlines have it. Where you go on a website and you say, this price is $200 for this ticket. You're like, oh, I don't know. I'm not ready to buy a ticket yet. And then by the time you get ready to buy a ticket, it's $300. I wish I bought the ticket in. What they could do is they could predict what the airfare was going to be next the following week or whatever. And so they would predict if it was, and they could determine if it was going to be like $300. So but that's a consumer product and it's super hard and such. And I'm like, but wait a minute. If you can predict revenue, and airlines can't collude, so you can't. So you can then help inform, like, why is the price going up? And then you can determine. And then most airlines, the price, you then, if one airline makes the price go up, then the others will follow. But if you could be the first, you're going to capture
the value.
And I so ultimately pivoted, they pivoted from this insurance product to revenue platform. And JetBlue was an early tester for them. And that gave them credibility then to go to other airlines. And they're with a bunch of other airlines right now. So then the other one was this weather platform, which is, again, same thing. We were with them. They were actually, I want to say, yeah, they were six guys. One was a former Israeli fighter pilot, so understood the weather. Another one was really good in the marketing side of things. And they had this idea to predict weather. And they had some trials with local baseball stadiums, whichever the baseball stadium is there. And so they were doing some trials there. And airlines rely very heavily on weather. But it's also airlines are, especially operational people, are very risk averse, which you want. And so there are official licensed software that is used that you get approved by the FAA and all that kind of stuff to run our weather intelligence for airlines. And the startup kept wanting to be that. I'm like, guys, you're not ready yet. You're not ready yet. We have to. And so they started doing trials with the Boston station, just Boston, because it was there. And we fostered them over time. And they used our name. That's what CVCs do. That brings good value to those startups. That then helped them get into the insurance products market, in various other areas, but they kept because the CEO's pilot, he was just passionate in aviation. So this was, I think we invested in 2017. They became the official weather platform, kicking out the weather company, which was owned by IBM. So, I mean, we're talking very, very, very established.
Incumbent, entrenched.
Very entrenched in 2022. And they are the weather platform for JetBlue. They've also deployed with other airlines and also other places, other businesses around the world, because weather is especially now. And it's been fascinating. They've launched satellites. They just got two more that went up on the latest SpaceX flight. They launched them last week. So they've got eight satellites. They probe data from all different places. There's currently in the US now some challenges happening in terms of government funding for various things. Yep. Literally, there was an article, who knows where this is going, but there was a Fortune article saying this company could be our future weather prediction. Because NOAA was losing some funding, National Ocean Air. And so Tomorrow.io is really, they're over $1 billion valuation as well. And they are reducing it in order to the hurdle to pass to get into an airline in the nerve center of the operations center, which is as risk averse as they come. That really shows that this platform is great. And so I'm excited to see where it goes. So it's been very helpful.
So clearly strategic for JetBlue at the time, mm-hmm. early access to technology that is now being deployed and really successful. But you hinted on the strategic value that JetBlue brought to this company, not just brand and credibility, but also guidance. Can you speak to that in terms of how you design, and this is really a design question, how did you design JetBlue Ventures to be bringing such strategic value to the startups you invested in?
Yeah, so we built out, so it was not just the investment side, which was super important. And it's hard for me that was leading it to be able to do everything, right? And to really help foster all my children, I would call them, all the various portfolio companies. And so we really needed to scale and bring out, now it's called the platform. This is before it's called, there wasn't platforms. This is early on.
How did you call it at the time?
I called it the operational team.
Okay.
JetBlue Ventures Operations. Now it's called platform. People out of CVC don't know what you mean by platform, by the way.
It's coming.
Yeah. So the operations team. And so the operations team would help startups. They have no clue how big companies run. And they just think they should just, set me up with the CEO. Send me up to the CEO, show them, and it is amazing. They want it in your ops center. I'm like, guys, you're not ready. If JetBlue actually used you, all your servers would crash and everything. You're not ready. You have to get your platform ready. And you're only going to get one chance.
Yep, one shot.
One shot. So you've got to be ready. We work with them on their pitch. And then we bring the business out with the VP and the directors and the managers and a couple of analysts. And they come for an innovation day in Silicon Valley. And so then it's like magic happens. And if it also helps us look at product market fit, too. Is this a company we would be interested in investing in? And so sometimes we would invest in a company, whether or not the team or the department was ready to implement them. And then sometimes they do a pilot test and we'd help, and we wouldn't invest, but it is a pilot test. And again, that exercise helps the startup learn how to work with the corporate learns how the corporate work with a startup, even if the pilot doesn't go anywhere. So it's one of those win-wins.
So I think there's a golden nugget. Very nice. And you have like where it's transferred from the investment team to the platform team. How did you think about that transition from closing the investments to supporting it?
Oh, yeah. So at the very beginning, the investment team is always out there sourcing startups. They go into a database, whatever database to use. Then the platform team uses the investment team database to pull the ecosystem that come into the funnel. The platform team works with the company to narrow it down. And ultimately, now the investment team comes to the thing and says, I'm now interested in this. Once an investment happens, if the investment happens and it is a startup that is something that might be involved with the company, there's engagement on the both sides until it actually is. So typically it's the investment team that sits on the board or is the board observer or maintains the main part of the relationship. The platform team helps set up the introductions at the parent. Once there's an implementation, whether it's a proof of concept, then the platform team is going to spend much more time with that startup and then report back to the investment team. Is this working? Is it working? Et cetera.
So you're like the OG of the platform team before it was called platform team. But I can see that your platform team could engage with not just the portfolio companies, but also the startups you had not invested
in.
And how did you think about that? Because most of the platform team we see is typically for the portfolio companies. But here you were already thinking, no, it could be wherever the value is for the mothership.
Remember, it's strategic value.
Exactly.
And even better, let's say a lot of companies, startups, aren't going to give a financial return. They may just truck along, especially in sort of the operational area. They become AKA zombie companies from an investment perspective. Mm-hmm. They're never going to have an exit. And so if they're not going to have an exit, like we're not going to invest in them, right? Maybe that's the investment side. But if they're going to provide strategic value, okay, what? That's even better. I don't have to put any capital out to invest and I'm going to get my strategic value, my strategic returns. So the platform team has a different twist on this whole thing.
So I'm going to ask a question which it's an opinion, of course. You can't do a parallel universe, but you were clearly trusted by JetBlue. You were pilots and you moved to different leadership functions. How do you think it would have worked out if it was you, but coming from the outside? So you would not have been in JetBlue. You would not know the corporate as deeply.
It would not be successful. And this isn't me. It's not because of me. It's because of a person from the inside, because there were a lot of naysayers. And the reason it really got traction is because the CEO trusted me deeply and the board trusted me deeply. I had a relationship with the board. Uniquely for me, this wouldn't necessarily be the case for anybody, but it happened for me at JetBlue. I was at a leading talent at a time where there's a lot of change happening at JetBlue. And I was hiring a lot of the officers from the outside or promoting them from inside. Of the entire officer and director corps, I think there were 130 of them. I'd either hired or promoted 118 of 130. I personally, literally knew everyone in the company. Now, that's not normal, but nonetheless, it's that internal friction in the mothership that can kill corporate ventures and usually does.
And it does, yes. Actually, maybe we can give credits to your CEO for picking you. Because you have to find the right person to lead this very nascent, with many naysayers type of approach.
Yeah, I think part of it, yeah. So Robin was very helpful and it was his idea in the end, right? Came up the idea of CVC, but it was his idea to launch it.
Now, I want to talk about some corporate venturing best practices that came from your investment in Joby, especially as it regards you bringing an amazing syndicate player to your ventures with Jim.
Yeah, early on, again, setting up, I'm going to step back even further. So when we set up the structure of JetBlue Ventures, there were a couple things that were super important. One was that we needed a 5-year roadmap. I needed to be able to hire an investment professional, and you can't hire an investment professional in venture unless you have carry.
Yep.
And so that's a very foreign concept to corporate. So we ended up with a phantom carry. And I wanted an investment committee that included at least one person from the outside, which that also is a foreign idea. And so ultimately, I ended up getting to know Jim Adler from Toyota Ventures. He had a good friend. We'd met through mutual friends. And I just thought he would be the perfect person to be on the investment committee. Yeah. So he interviewed around. Yep, he's great. So he was on the investment committee. Now, this is before I had invested in, we had invested in Joby. And so I'm a firm believer, just like all venture capitalists, you should syndicate, bring other with along. And so when I went to look at Joby for us to invest in them, I right away said, look, this company is an auto OEM. And so I mentioned to the founder, and I knew all the CVCs, all the auto OEM CVCs. What about this one? No, they're too slow. What about this one? No, don't like the person. No. And I said, what about Toyota? He's like, Toyota, that's interesting. Toyota production, they could be very valuable, but that would be hard to close quickly. I'm like, I got a friend. So call Jim Adler. I'm like, Jim, you need to see this startup. And he's, no, I don't know. I'm like, no, trust me, trust me. Drop everything, go see the startup. And for a variety of reasons, the investment window was very short. And a lot of founders like to say, oh, if you don't close in 2 weeks, I'm not interested. They're trying to rush you to a close. There was actually a very valid reason. An event that was happening is like they needed the money during that period or it wasn't a window. So it was a note into the note. This one was a note into the B. They were already Series A, so it was a note into the B. And it needed 2 weeks. And the founders, maybe you guys, Jeff LaVenture, can close in 2 weeks because you're nimble, but there's no way Toyota could. They did because of Jim. So we co-invested and he also was on the Joby board. We were both board observers very early on. Both were helping with the company. And then it became an important part. So Toyota was looking to become more than an auto company, which is why they set up Toyota Ventures in the first place. And they ultimately moved to with the now mobility company. And so Jim was really instrumental in getting Toyota to be more involved, brought the Toyota executives. They got very interested in this space. Toyota actually used to be early on, the Toyota family, the very beginning before it was really even Toyota, really wanted to have an aviation side to it. And actually there is an aviation division of Toyota. Nobody even knows about him, called Arasahi, but very small. But it's just been this fascination of aviation. So it sparked this interest. So then once Toyota got more interested, they then ended up leading a Series C for $500 million.
Half a billion dollars. And this is the mothership
this
at that point.
This is the mothership. Yeah, yeah. This is the mothership. And when they invest that amount of money, they need to make sure the money is going to be so successful. So they set a lot of engineers. We're setting up our production systems and all of that. And so Toyota's been very involved. They've since we announced in about October another investment. So overall, it's almost $1 billion on the roadmap for that. And so they're very, and they've now, they call themselves a mobility company. So it is actually pivoting Toyota too.
It's an amazing story for Toyota. It's also an amazing story about the syndicate building and getting the right partners who bring different superpowers.
Yeah. I knew, of course, at this point, so it was 2017, we're still pretty early on. Jeff LaVenture started in 2016, so it's 2017. But CVC's small ecosystem. We have the GCV community. And I knew all of the CVCs in auto space, but also just in aviation in general.
Yeah. So we talked about GCV. Well, in GCV Monterey right now, and you were the chair from 2017 to 2020. How do you see the community and industry standards from then to now?
Yeah, I think there's just been so much evolution. I think initially it still was a bit nichey and VCs were still back in 2016, 2017, they were very reluctant to take on CVCs. But what has happened is I think that the CVC industry has matured over time. A lot of good firms, TDK, many, many others, Shell, on and on, that now is a real established piece. And I think, so one, I think VCs welcome CVCs. And I think that corporates begin to see value, the platform side, and startups see the value. So I think everyone's seeing the value in it.
What's your wish for the community now, let's say 2030? How do you think it's going to move away from niche to more established? How do you see the next 5 years?
It's a very interesting time right now. It's hard to say. I think because of the internet, because of AI, because of there's just things move so much faster. I think that companies that have a CVC, again, you have a seat at the table to see things early on.
Yeah.
Things, AI, you can go from a nothing into a multi-billion dollar company fairly quickly because scaling becomes easier. And so you can miss the boat pretty fast. So I think it's going to become even more important. But it is also at the same time, when corporations, when there's uncertainty, stock market's uncertain, there's just a general uncertainty, corporates have a hard time deciding to start corporate venturing. So I think it's a period we might see fewer new corporate ventures and we'll see strengthening of existing ones. There'll be a cycle. There's always a cycle. I think the next few years, I think, is going to be challenging for new entrants in the space. It's really going to be harder to provide value. So they're going to have to work even harder.
Very nice. And then if you were to give one advice, my final question, to someone starting a CVC today, what would be your advice to them?
Network. It's one thing if someone says, oh, can I have coffee with you? But if you actually come meet me in my office, make it easy for me, but spending time and educate yourself, learn. So don't ask stupid questions. Learn as much as you possibly can. There's a lot of case studies, really good case studies, Stanford's own case studies, and Harvard's own case studies in corporate venture. Read up on it and then come to good conferences and things like that. It's just super important to network.
I feel like I should mention, we have the IESC case study, which is available also in Harvard Publishing on TDK Ventures.
And there's one on JetBlue Ventures at Stanford. So kudos, I'd love to read the case study there. The one that we did with Stanford was like how to set up a CVC.
Yeah, nice, perfect. Thank you so much, Bernie. It was amazing. Thank you.
It's nice. Thank you.